Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fell in Love with an Earl by Anna Bradley, narrated by Heather Wilds. Chapter 1. Hawks Run, Oxfordshire, mid-December 1812. He'd lost his hat somewhere between London and Hawks Run. Of the dozen different things now trying Adrian's temper, it was the lost hat that made it snap. An elegant hat, polished boots and a flawless white cravat, tied in tron d'amour and artfully creased, separated a fashionable London gentleman from a plain country squire. He'd given up his left boot and his cravat as lost before he left the city last night, the latter being covered in vomit and the former, well, he wasn't entirely sure what had happened to his boot, but it wasn't on his foot. He must have lost it when Lady Pamela shoved him out the window. But a gentleman's hat, that was one step too bloody far. A beaver hat was a precious, hallowed thing, akin to a holy relic for God's sake. Practical, too. He ventured a glance into the merciless glare above, wincing as pain lanced his skull and hard white sunlight seared his eyeballs. Was it necessary for it to shine quite so brightly? He'd happily give up one remaining boot for a comforting layer of London smog. Really, it was just this sort of unreasonable cheerfulness that made people detest the country. Here, in particular. If he'd known when he'd left his townhouse last night that he'd find himself here, he'd have downed a whole bottle of brandy instead of half, but it was too bloody late now. Sobriety had caught up to him somewhere near Hoddesdon, which was a great pity, as he preferred to remain as close to unconscious as possible whenever he was in the vicinity of Hawks Run. Damned if anyone who saw him right now would recognize him as the fashionable, charming Lord Hawk. He looked far closer to the dissipated barbarian he actually was. And that smell! Stale smoke, regurgitated brandy, and the thick, cloying stench of Lady Pamela's perfume. Taken together, it was enough to make him... He gagged. Bile burning his throat, but he choked it back before it spewed from his lips and splashed into his lap. He reined in his horse at the end of the drive and waited until his stomach ceased its rebellion before running the tip of his tongue cautiously over his parched lips. This was no time to cast up his accounts. He was about to appear at his country estate after 6, or was it 7, long months of unexplained absence, and he was reeking of wicked deeds as it was. Breeches splattered with vomit was doing it a bit too brown. Oh dear, this is a conundrum. The soft exclamation came out of nowhere, startling him into another ill-fated glance into the remorseless sky above. He caught a glimpse of bare dark branches clawing at the blue, and a flash of something yellow. It wasn't the sun this time. A remarkably large bird, then. He bloody well hoped not, as any bird such an aggressive shade of yellow was sure to be a vicious predator. He snapped his eyes shut to prevent his retinas from bursting into flames, but they flew open again when something sharp struck him in the face. What the devil? He despised the country, yes, but this was the first sign he'd ever had. It despised him in return. Oh no, that wasn't meant to happen. This time he took the precaution of shading his eyes with his hand before glancing up. He could see nothing but shifting shadows at first, but as his vision adjusted, he caught a glimpse of the hem of a shockingly yellow cloak, and a slender foot, clad in a worn half-boot, dangling from one of the branches above his head. No. You mean to say you don't make a habit of hurling branches at innocent travellers? Or guilty ones, as the case may be. It wasn't a branch, but a clump of mistletoe. The foot swung back and forth. Rather a large clump. I do beg your pardon. How unfortunate you're not wearing a hat. He gritted his teeth at the mention of his missing hat. If I'd known I'd be attacked, madam, I'd have worn a suit of armour. She laughed. Laughed? As if this were all tremendously amusing. The sound echoed in the crisp morning air like birdsong, the cheerful chirp of it scraping over his raw nerves and further souring his temper. His jaw clenched. What do you mean, hanging about in that tree like a bloody monkey? She gave a prim little sniff. There's no need to curse, sir. I beg to differ, madam. How did you even manage to climb up there? It was a large tree, at least 30 feet tall. Why, the same way anyone climbs a tree, one limb at a time. Well, come down from there at once. as happy as I'd be to oblige you, sir. I'm afraid it's not that simple. I'm, attached, you see. Attached? What do you mean? There was a brief pause, then the delicate clearing of a throat. Attached means joined, sir, or fastened, or connected to. For God's sake, I know what attached means. I meant to inquire as to the nature of your particular attachment to that tree. Good Lord, wasn't that obvious? Oh, I beg your pardon. You just seemed, a bit confused. It's my hair. It's gotten tangled in one of the branches, and I can't get it loose. I'm stuck.
Nonsense, he huffed. You're not stuck. Simply scamper back down the way you went up. Cats do it all the time.
Cats don't have long hair that is apt to get tangled in the branches. Young ladies do, however, and I am, alas, the latter rather than the former. Unfortunate, but there it is.
Untangle it, then.
It wouldn't prove to be that easy, of course, because things were never as easy as they should be, and because he'd clearly stumbled into the ninth circle of hell. Or Hawk's Run. Same bloody thing. Untangle it. She made a sound like a hastily smothered snort. That is an inspired idea, sir. Indeed, I wonder I didn't think of it myself. But now that I consider it, it occurs to me that if I release my hold on the trunk, I'm quite likely to tumble out of the tree. So you see, I'm in a bit of a quandary. First a conundrum, and now a quandary. This chit was making his head throb.
You are indeed, and I've half a mind to leave you in it. You're foolish enough to climb up there. Had I not had the cursed bad luck to stumble upon you, you'd have had to get yourself down somehow.
He waited, but his threat did not have the effect he'd intended. Any woman in her right mind would have dissolved into a flood of tears and pleas for his assistance. But she only said, "Do as you will, then. I'll find my own way down eventually." He cast a despairing glance from his unbooted foot to the frozen ground below. Absurd chit. It would serve her right if he abandoned her to her fate, but as much as she deserved to lose her toes to frostbite for her ridiculous stunt, he couldn't quite bring himself to leave her up there. Good Lord, how he loathed heroics.
Stay where you are. I'll climb up and untangle you.
Your gallantry does you credit, sir. He grunted. She was doing her best to sound grateful, but there was a distinct thread of amusement in her voice.
Gallantry be damned. I simply choose not to explain to the magistrate how some witless girl froze to death in my tree.
Her foot stopped swinging. Your tree?
My tree, my branches, and my mistletoe.
He dismounted and picked his way across the rutted drive, trying to sidestep the patches of frozen mud, but it was difficult with only one boot, and by the time he reached the bottom of the tree, his stocking was ruined. Not that it made much difference at this point.
You're trespassing on my property, madam.
Your property? She repeated, her amusement vanishing. If this is your property, then you must be...
Adrian Chatham, the Earl of Hawk. If I fall from the tree and perish from a broken neck, you'll have the satisfaction of knowing the Earl was killed in service to you.
He waited, but she didn't offer another impertinent reply, so he started climbing. He paused when he was level with her foot and squinted up at her.
On which side are you tangled?
The left. There's a thick branch just there, right by your...
Yes, yes. I see it.
He wedged his foot between two sturdy branches, wrapped his arms around a bough above him, and swung himself up. The limb gave a protesting groan, and he shook his head to dislodge the image of his twisted body, lying unconscious under this cursed tree, with bits of his skull scattered about, and kept climbing until he reached a limb that could take his weight, several branches above and behind her. The dappled sunlight filtering through the trees lit up a thick mass of wild golden-brown curls, because, of course, she must have wild curls like some heroine from a romantic novel. Impertinent, somehow, that hair. He couldn't see her face, but in her yellow cloak, with that irrepressible hair wound around the branches, she looked like some sort of exotic tree nymph. The thought irritated him more than it should have, and his voice was gruff when he asked.
Why would you climb a tree with your hair unbound?
I didn't. She held up a wide blue ribbon. Why would you go riding with only one boot?
I didn't.
He braced himself against the branch at his back.
I was, separated from it. In any case, it's not the same thing.
No, she agreed. I didn't lose my ribbon.
I didn't lose my boot either.
Not exactly. It was likely still lodged between the window and the sill in Lady Pamela's dressing room.
But I have no intention of explaining myself to a thief who climbed my tree to steal my mistletoe.
Steal it? I would never.
Quiet, if you please, madam. I'm rather busy.
His hands hovered over the nest of curls and branches, but he hesitated, reluctant to touch her. He didn't want to know if her hair was as thick and soft as it looked. He hadn't any choice, however, unless he wanted to spend the rest of his days in this godforsaken tree with her.
Hold still now.
He reached for her, his fingertips catching in her heavy curls, as he began to work her hair free from the branches, one lock at a time. She stiffened when he first touched her, but she did as he bade her, keeping silent and still. It seemed to take ages, and by the time he was finished, he was desperate to stop touching her.
There, you're free.
As soon as he'd untangled the last lock and slid his hands free of her hair, she scampered down the tree, hopping from branch to branch, as quick and agile as a monkey, the sun caressing her shiny curls.
Thank you, my lord.
He followed at a more cautious pace. Getting down a tree in one boot was a devil of a business, as it turned out. By the time he reached the bottom, she'd gathered up the clumps of mistletoe she'd liberated from the branches above.
Making away with your ill-gotten gains, are you?
He crossed his arms over his chest and leaned against the tree.
What in the world are you going to do with all that mistletoe?
It's for the St. Mary's Ladies Benevolent Society's Christmas fete. We'd planned to make kissing balls to decorate Goodall Abbey. The money's raised from the fete benefit the church fund, you know, but if you object to giving your mistletoe to the cause, we can always...
Take it. Never let it be said I don't support the church.
Or kissing. Between the missing boot and hat, and the stench wafting from him, he was far from being the charming gentleman who beguiled London's beauties, but he was rather proud of this little bit of gallantry. Alas, it was utterly wasted on her. She didn't even appear to hear him, so preoccupied was she with stuffing the mistletoe into the pockets of the outrageous yellow cloak she was wearing. He'd never seen a more ridiculous garment in his life, but either she didn't realize it, or she didn't care. And thus she carried it off in a way few ladies could have done.
May I have the pleasure of knowing who hurled my own mistletoe at my head this morning?
Nonsense. I never hurled anything. She raised her face to his, cocking her head. Are you always this cross, my lord? Her face was not what he'd been expecting. She wasn't a great beauty, exactly. Her generous mouth and pointed chin defied any claim to it, but hers was the sort of face that fascinated. Her eyes were wide, thickly lashed, and an unusual clear greyish blue. Not the glittering dark blue of sapphires, or the grey of storm clouds, but something in between the two. Rather like... Oh, he didn't bloody know.
Blueberries?
No, that wasn't it. Winter frost, perhaps. He'd never seen eyes like hers before, but then Hawk's Run was a place for never-befores and never-agains. Everything about her, from her full red lips to the high arch of her cheekbones, to the spattering of freckles across the bridge of her nose, so arrested him. It was as if the bright sun had once again scorched his eyeballs. She must have noticed him staring, but it didn't seem to trouble her. She merely raised her chin and met his eyes. How do you do, Lord Hawk? I'm Miss Helena Templeton. Helena Templeton? The last name sounded vaguely familiar. Hadn't he heard some gossip about some chit or other with the surname Templeton? Yes, there'd been something, but he couldn't recall what exactly, and the first name hadn't been Helena, in any case. So who the devil was she? And what was she doing up his tree?
Who?
Her eyebrows drew together. Miss Helena Templeton, your son's governess, my lord.
Nonsense. I don't employ a governess.
Certainly not one who was as much trouble as her. He'd sooner lay his neck upon a chopping block than permit such an impertinent chit in his house. Anyone could see the girl was trouble, and he'd had enough of that already. As for her distracting face and unusual eyes, he didn't want to be fascinated by them, or by her. He simply wanted peace. I assure you that you do indeed employ a governess, Lord Hawk. I've been here these past 6 months now. Your boys are a delight. I'm tremendously fond of them. Ryan and Etienne, a delight. Now he knew she was lying. He loved his sons, but he'd yet to hear any governess describe them as delightful. Though, if she really was their governess, it would explain why she was up that tree. They'd likely chased her up there, and even now were watching from the windows to see if she'd find her way back down. God knew it would be easy enough for them to intimidate a petite, slender thing like her. The boys were young yet, only 6 years old, but they were wild, just as he'd been at their age. And then there were two of them. It wouldn't take much for them to overwhelm her. It seemed it was time to have a word with his housekeeper, Mrs. Norris.
"Go on back up to the house, Miss Templeton. You're dismissed for now."
"Of course, my lord." She offered him a curtsy. "Welcome home, Lord Hawk."
"No need to trouble yourself with the courtesies, Miss Templeton."
He swung back up into the saddle with as much grace as a man missing a boot and his hat could summon, and peered down at her.
"I won't be here long enough for it to make any difference."
She didn't reply, and he didn't spare another word for her, but jerked his horse's head toward the castle and thundered up the drive without a backward glance.
Chapter 2
Eleanor wandered up the drive toward the castle in Lord Hawk's wake, her pockets filled with prickly bunches of glossy green mistletoe, her head still ringing from the wicked curses that had just spilled from his lordship's lips into her unsuspecting ears. Such a prodigious quantity of them, and in such quick succession, too. He was a bit, she'd been expecting someone a trifle more, that is, the rumours she'd heard of him hadn't been to his credit, certainly, but she hadn't imagined he'd be quite so, oh, for pity's sake. There was no sense dancing about it. He was a perfect beast, growly, ill-tempered, rude, and unforgivably arrogant for a man without a hat, a cravat, or a decent pair of boots. Didn't employ a governess, indeed. It was as plain as day. He hadn't the vaguest idea who she was. Even after she'd told him her name, he'd merely stared blankly at her, as if he'd never heard of such a thing as a governess before. On the bright side, he didn't seem to have heard of a Templeton sister either, which was fortunate indeed, given all the gossip about them and their allegedly magical matchmaking schemes. But really, did Lord Hawk imagine his 6-year-old sons cared for themselves? Or had he forgotten them entirely? One didn't like to think any father could be capable of such a thing, but she'd been the governess here for 6 months, and this was the first time she'd ever laid eyes on Lord Hawk. He was not, alas, a shining example of paternal devotion. She threw open one of the massive iron-studded double doors that led into the castle with a bit more force than necessary, and hurried through the entryway and downstairs into the kitchens. "Good morning, Abby." Abigail Hurley, the castle's kitchen maid, was seated at the table, reading over cook's notes from a scrap of paper. A tiny silver kitten perched on her shoulder. She looked up with a smile as Helena entered. "Morning, miss." Helena passed through the kitchen into the storeroom beyond, unloaded the contents of her pockets into a basket waiting on the end of the long work table, then returned to the kitchen, pausing in front of the fire to rub the chill from her hands. "So, Abby, what can you tell me about the Earl of Hawk?" Abby didn't look up from her note. "What? You mean our mysterious employer, that Earl of Hawk?" "Not so mysterious any more." Helena set the kettle on the stove to boil. "He's returned to Hawk's Run. I saw him myself just now, coming up the drive." Abby's head jerked up, her eyes bulging. "The Earl of Hawk? What, you mean to say the Earl of Hawk is here?" "Is there another Earl I'm not aware of?" Goodness, she hoped not. A single Earl was more than enough for one morning, and the Earl of Hawk enough for an entire lifetime. "Nay, miss, it's just his lordship here." Abby leapt up, wincing as the kitten hung on, digging its claws into her shoulder. "I beg your pardon, Hestia, but Lord Hawk's return is the most exciting thing that's happened in Hawk's Run since, well, ever." "Give Hestia here." Helena held out her hands for the kitten. Abby disentangled Hestia, pressed an absent kiss on the kitten's fluffy head, then handed her over. "That must be why Mrs. Norris just flew out of here, like her hair was on fire." "Likely as not. I dare say Lord Hawk summoned her." He didn't seem like the patient sort either. "And you say you saw him? Really, miss, It's terribly unfair that all the most delightful things should always happen to you.
It wasn't delightful in the least, Abby. I was stuck in that enormous alder tree at the time and...
Oh dear, your hair again.
Yes, it snagged on the branches. Lord Hawk was obliged to climb up and untangle me, and I assure you, he wasn't at all pleased about it. Then he accused me of stealing his mistletoe. Of all absurd things.
Abby let out a dreamy sigh, as if she hadn't heard a word Helena had just said. My goodness, Lord Hawk! He's terribly fashionable, you know. Quite the gentleman about town, or so my sister in London says. He's meant to be terribly handsome. How did he look?
He was a handsome man, certainly, but not a happy one, with that grim cast to his mouth. He did have handsome green eyes, if one overlooked how bloodshot they were.
I don't like to disillusion you, Abby, but he looked dreadful, like a fox who'd been mauled by a pack of hunting dogs.
It wasn't a kind thing to say, but he'd threatened to leave her stuck up the tree for pity's sake.
He smelled even worse.
She added for good measure.
Smelled?
Abby leapt to her feet, wringing her hands over this distressing detail.
But he's an earl.
Oh dear, he was indeed. And he was their employer, too. She cast about for something positive to say. But the only thing he excelled at was cursing. No, wait, there was one other thing. He's an excellent climber. Really, the most accomplished climber, Abby. But Abby didn't give a fig about climbing. She glanced toward the door and lowered her voice.
What did he smell of?
Cheroots. Sour brandy and courtesans. I dare say he came straight from London, from an infamous debauchery. He was missing his hat, his cravat, and one of his boots, too. It was wicked of her to gossip, but she took a perverse delight in the absurd, and a foul-smelling lord was as absurd a thing as they were likely to find in Hawk's Run.
My goodness! A half-naked, rancid earl!
Abby dropped back into her chair, overcome.
You have the most extraordinary luck, Miss Templeton.
Well, he's here now. Perhaps you'll have the great good fortune to get a whiff of him yourself soon. Until then, she hesitated, eyeing her young friend. Abby was 3 years younger than she was, and she'd never set foot outside of Hawk's Run, but if anyone could discover the truth behind Lord Hawk's sudden appearance here, it was Abby. For all that she'd never been to London, Abby knew more about what was passing in town than many of the people who lived there. She had a voracious appetite for scandal, particularly scandal featuring fashionable members of the ton, and she was kept well supplied with gossip by her sister Penelope, who had a position as a housemaid in one of the grand London houses. Eleanor didn't quite approve of Abby's obsession with tittle-tattle, but in this case, Abby's knowledge of London's most notorious aristocrats could prove useful.
Lord Hawk looked as if he left London in a hurry, Abby. There must be more to his appearance here this morning than a sudden desire to come home, don't you think?
Oh, there's doings afoot, miss, and nothing good neither. There's a scandal behind it, to be sure.
Not Lord Hawk's first, either, but he's such a favourite with the ton, they tend to forgive him his sins.
Abby tapped her lip, thinking.
Still, whatever he's done this time must be awful indeed, if he's left London.
Helena bit her lip. She didn't like to encourage scandal-mongering, but his presence here was certain to agitate the boys. It was rare for a single day to pass without Ryan and Etienne asking after him, and she'd rather know beforehand if he intended to vanish as suddenly as he'd appeared. Surely that made it an exception.
Will you write to your sister in London and find out what's behind it?
I won't have to. Abby reached around her to grab the teapot, a sly grin on her lips.
If it's as shocking as I suspect, she'll have already written to me. Mark my words, miss. Whatever mischief his lordship's been up to, we'll know what it is before the week is out.
Thank you, Abby. Now let's see to the boys' chocolate, shall we? They'll wake soon, and I'd rather they weren't obliged to scamper about searching for me. She'd learned the hard way the mischief two energetic boys could get into, if left to their own devices, in an old empty castle like this one. The last time she'd been late coming to their bedchamber in the morning, she'd been obliged to spend hours searching for them, only to find them teetering atop a dusty ladder in the attic, plucking spiders from the rafters and depositing them in old canning jars so they might train them up for a spider circus.
I may as well, Abby let out a theatrical sigh and reached into a cupboard for the block of chocolate. I suppose preparing the chocolate is the most interesting thing that's ever going to happen to me.
Oh, here you are, Miss Templeton.
A breathless Mrs. Norris hurried into the kitchen, her wispy grey hair flying about her head.
I'm certain Abby must have told you Lord Hawk has arrived unexpectedly at Hawk's Run this morning. Dear me, I'm rather a flutter, I'm afraid.
Yes, she told me, Mrs. Norris, and I saw his lordship coming up the drive. This time Helena held her tongue about the stench of brandy and courtesans. The less said about that, the better.
I've left Lord Hawk in his study, Mrs. Norris said. He has not yet summoned Ryan and Etienne, and perhaps it would be best, Miss Templeton, if you kept them away from that part of the house until he's prepared to see them. His lordship is rather fatigued from his journey.
Helena smothered a snort. Fatigued, indeed. Lord Hawk's trouble was that last night's debauchery had caught up to him this morning, and he was as disagreeable as gentlemen generally were under such circumstances. Mrs. Norris needn't have worried, however, as she'd happily keep the boys as far as possible away from their father, and for as long as she could possibly manage it. It shouldn't prove too difficult. If the past 6 months were any indication, Lord Hawk had little enough interest in his sons as it was. It would have been best if he'd kept away, but odds were his lordship would quickly grow bored of the country and scurry off back to his London amusements before the week was out. Of course, Mrs. Norris, we'll remain in the schoolroom until luncheon, and then we'll venture outside this afternoon. Mrs. Norris breathed a sigh of relief.
Very good, Miss Templeton.
The chocolate is ready, Miss Templeton.
Thank you, Abby.
Helena took the tray with the stout silver chocolate pot and the porcelain cups and strode from the kitchen up the staircase into the hallway. It was growing rather late. The boys would come in search of her if she didn't appear, and the last thing she wanted was them encountering their bedraggled father on the staircase. But as soon as she rounded the corner, she heard the unholy clatter of two pairs of 6-year-old feet pounding down the staircase.
Dash it! She was too late.
She hurried forward, the cups rattling on the tray.
"Pardon me, my fine gentleman, but where do you think you're going?"
Two pairs of eyes, the same spring green as their father's, peered innocently down at her from the first-floor landing.
"Our papa's here," Ryan announced. "We saw him coming up the drive from our bedchamber window. He wasn't wearing a hat,"
Etienne added, as if this bit of information was far too fascinating to wait another minute.
"It was gone."
It was indeed, among other things, most notably his papa's manners.
I see. And has your papa summoned you?
Adrian, or Ryan, as he was called, shook his head.
Not yet, but he...
Then you're to march straight back upstairs at once, if you please. You both know the rules. You're to wait in your bedchamber in the mornings until I come fetch you.
But Miss Templeton...
No arguments, if you please. Your father isn't fit to be seen... We'll send for you when he's prepared to see you. Until then, we will proceed as we do every other morning.
Up you go. She braced herself, her fingers tightening around the edges of the tray. For all their high spirits, Ryan and Etienne were good lads, and she'd made great strides with them since she'd come to Hawk's Run, but they were still little boys, and there were few creatures in all of existence who had less self-control.
Boys, she began in a warning tone. Did you hear what I...
But it was already too late. Ryan cast a sidelong glance at Etienne, and then both of them dove toward the bottom of the stairs at once. She leapt to block them, rather a foolish impulse, really, given she was burdened with a heavy tray. But all might still have been well if Hestia hadn't chosen that moment to make a wild dash for the staircase. The tiny silver kitten sealed their fate. She'd become quite nimble over the past 6 months of chasing two active boys, but the combined pandemonium of Ryan, Etienne and Hestia was too much for any mortal woman. She stumbled backwards, and a blood-curdling feline shriek split the air as her foot came down hard on poor Hestia's tail. The outraged kitten darted between her feet and up the stairs in a blur of raised grey fur at the same time the boys darted down them. Etienne jumped over a stair in a truly heroic effort to avoid trampling Hestia, but he knocked into his brother, who tumbled down the last two stairs. Etienne landed on top of him, then Helena's feet got tangled in theirs, and she went down, her backside hitting the hard floor with a thud. As for the tray, it seemed to hang suspended in mid-air for an instant, three horrified pairs of eyes fixed on it until, inevitably, it descended again in a deafening crash of silver and shattered porcelain. The chocolates...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?